Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Everyone, welcome to this episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast sponsored by Overdrive. Please make sure you follow us on social media. We're at Pro Book Nerds on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, where you can keep up with all of the latest and greatest there. You can also send us a note if you would like. Our email address is professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. And we always appreciate any ratings or reviews that you may do on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify or anywhere that you get your podcasts. All of the housekeeping out of the way. Let's kick off this episode on 1990s nostalgia and historical fiction. I have two 90s queens here with me, Sydney and Jane. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to what will hopefully be not too infuriating of a discussion.
Oh boy. No promises.
I know. So when I pitched this idea to y'all, because the 1990s are back in a interesting way as the setting for many new historical fiction books. Oh,
it's just a knife to the heart.
I would love to start there. How do we feel about that? Because I think we have strong feelings.
So here's what I will say. And I think I'm like wondering if you feel the same way. So I was born in 1984. So I'm an elder millennial. And to me, the 90s, like basically like pre-September 11th, were such an innocent time. I feel like I was so obsessed with like lip smackers and body glitter and, you know, Sun Ripened Raspberry Bath and Body Works spray and having a lava lamp. And I was just like living my best little like suburban girl life in the Midwest. But it was also at the same time a weird time because there was some really cool like counterculture things going on with like music. And I was like, I had an older brother, so I like knew about grunge and I knew about all this stuff, but I was also just like kind of like a teeny bopper. But like the angst was brewing, you know, it was in there, it was ready. And so I think the 90s like set a really good stage for my teens and like all of the like melodrama that I felt. And the 90s really allowed me to be kind of willfully like ignorant and blissful in a way that I feel like kids don't get to be anymore.
Jane, even though it was like a little bit before this time that you're talking about, I see you now as being Samantha Mathis's best friend and Pump Up the Volume. Like that's you. You're there in the like field after school in your car listening to Harry's show. It's great.
Love it. Oh my gosh. I love it. Yeah, it's funny. It's like I did a lot of my best reading in the 90s. I think the 90s is the time when I really became obsessed with books.
Yeah.
And I read a lot of like really pulpy teen romance novels.
Yes.
like consumed them.
Oh, we're gonna need you to drop some titles later for sure.
Yeah.
My favorite were this series. It was a series, but it wasn't really a series. It was like a collection. And you might remember them on the spine, it said Love Stories in like a 90s, like kind of like scribbled marker font. And it was like behind it was like a splash of bright pink. And they were just like very like tween, like safe love stories. And there were like 100 of them. And I would go to the library and they were all on the paperback rounds and I would grab handfuls and just read them all, like all weekend. I would read like 5 or 6 of them.
I just pulled them up and these covers are legit.
Aren't they
So
great?
incredible. Yes. Oh, they're so cute.
I also loved, like Sweet Valley High. I loved Babysitter's Club.
I will say that it took me like 4 or 5 spins of the mouse wheel to see a black couple. I
Oh, yeah. That
was
is, yeah.
like, wow.
Yes. It was not a good
Oh,
time
90s, not a
for,
great time for,
not a
yeah.
good time for like representation, not a good time for diversity of fiction. It was very, very, very much different. And so that's why it's kind of cool, actually, to come full circle. That's why it's kind of cool now to see fiction books that are
Yeah.
revisiting the 90s, but through the lens of what we know now about what was to come, what was all of the changes that have happened between then and now. It definitely, the historical fiction set in the 1990s is different than
Yeah.
the fiction we read in the 90s, which I think is an interesting kind of way to
It
compare and
still has
contrast.
that sense of safety though. I feel like it gives us the opportunity to look back on a time that was a lot less innocent than we remember it and be
Yes.
critical of it without it necessarily destroying our sweet 90s dreams, which is
Yeah.
actually really generous because I mean, we can definitely self-reflect and be like, wow, ignorant white girl, way to go. But I think it's being it there's it's a very gentle look back in a lot of ways,
Yeah.
which is kind.
And I think what strikes me about this trend is that for the first time in my life, things that I remember experiencing are now trendy. And I know this happens all the time. My mom said this often when I was growing up that we were just repeating like her 70s fashion and her 80s fashion, just all these things. So I knew it would come eventually. And it has, and I hate it.
You know what's so funny, Emma? They had a vintage, they called it a vintage festival at the IX Center, which is like like a weird convention center here in Cleveland. And I was like, oh, I love vintage stuff. And I looked and
Oh
it was
no.
90s and 2000s.
Oh my God, that
No,
makes me want to
no,
die. I
no.
went thrifting yesterday with my friend and her daughter who's going to prom. She was looking for a prom dress and she was just like, oh, I want to go. And she was naming all these vintage stores. And I was like, oh, is she looking specific? Because I was trying to help, like, do we want to go to a vintage store where the prices are probably going to be exorbitant, but probably more curated so she'll be more easily able to find stuff? Or does she want to go someplace that it's a little bit more of like a wild card experience? There's going to be more hunting, but like prices might be in your range, whatever. And she's like, oh, she's definitely looking, she definitely prefers something vintage. And she goes, but we're talking like 90s and 2000s. She's like, not our vintage. And I was like,
Oh no.
I'm gonna need like 10 minutes and a very stiff iced coffee to recover from this conversation alone. Luckily, this woman is my age, though we were both a little like,
Like
yeah,
think back on
but
the dresses you wore.
yeah,
yeah.
to
Like I went
dances.
to one school dance like as a high schooler and
Yeah.
it had this Jessica McClintock
Oh my God, Gunny
number.
Sacks.
I mean, I looked like I was a 60-year-old woman like at a
You looked like you
retirement
were,
dinner. I was
yes,
like a
you were
mother with a
like,
bride.
you were like, there's so much lace here. Yeah. Those big square shoulders. You got it
Yeah.
at Deb, up and ups and downs. Do
Deb
you remember ups
or
and
Kato or
downs?
Fashion Bug.
Hot stuff.
And one thing that I do like, and I will say about the resurgence of the 90s, is that as a chubby kid, a fat kid in the 90s, I didn't always get to wear the trendy stuff. But now these like plus size companies are coming out with 90s stuff. And so I feel like I'm healing my inner child a little bit by
Yes.
reliving those days and actually participating in the fun trends.
100%. I also feel like as older folks now, we can wear anything we want. So it's like we could wear stuff that's like quote unquote of the time, or we can wear trendy stuff from the 90s, or we can wear whatever we want.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because we can do either. So it's almost like revisiting it with no shame.
Yeah, we have an adult budget. We can, our parents don't have to say over what we buy.
Right. If I need a pair of Doc Martens in every color, then so be it. Right.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like, so I didn't keep any of this stuff. Like, because that was sort of a thing where it was like, you don't need to hang on to these things that are so trend specific, time specific. But yeah, of course, everything's coming back. And I keep seeing, this is so hideous. I keep seeing TikToks of people being like, vintage Charlotte Russe.
I saw that.
There's leopard shorts.
Mm-hmm. I saw the leopard shorts. My favorite are all the reactions. My favorite TikTok so far has been the girl who's trying to describe the house phone, the landline. And then the guy comes on. He's like, oh, she's describing a landline. Oh, how old am I?
I saw one yesterday where a girl was showing a Gen Z adorable, fashionable teen was showing that she had discovered
layered tank tops.
And the TikTok creator, who I don't know her name, but she's so funny. She came on and she was like, I'm going to need you to get ones that are way longer that almost look like a mini dress. And why stop at layering two? You should definitely have like 5 or 6.
And they need a lace trim.
Lace trim that will get caught on everything.
Yeah. And if you can line up the lace trims at the top. Yes. No.
The top one's going to have to be a little slouchier. Like,
oh, gosh. Yeah. The layered tank tops were brutal. I had a drawer of just the tank tops that you could put under anything.
Oh, yeah. Just
two different colors under another shirt.
I'm such a millennial. Yeah. I will still layer a tank top.
Why wouldn't you?
But if I have something low cut, you know, yeah, I'm putting a cami under there.
Why
I
wouldn't you?
Myself.
No, same.
No, layering tank tops for like the duration from like when I was young until college. Yeah. It was like a 20-year thing of layering tank tops.
If you want to elevate it, slap a chunky belt in there.
Yeah, oh, really my God.
In a statement necklace. That's more 2000s, necklace. But still.
Yeah, but still. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, that 90s to 2000s. But because we are here to talk about books as well.
Oh, yeah.
Reading. We obviously have a lot of thoughts on the 90s as a whole, but we wanted to discuss a combination of books, but mostly, and this pains me, historical fiction set in the 1990s, because the definition of historical fiction is just literature that takes place in the past. So, I mean, we could have historical fiction like in the 2000s, you know? So. Sure. We'll just let that be. But let's kick it off with some picks and thoughts. I'd love to hear from one of y'all first.
I will say that I am just now kind of discovering, this is a little embarrassing, but also I think very telling, which is that if something takes place in the 90s, I don't necessarily immediately call it out. It's like, oh, I am actively reading a book that takes place in this time period, because either it's a part of the story. Like I know there's going to be one you're talking about, Emma, the Emma Straub book, which I adored, but I wasn't sitting here like, oh my gosh, this is in the 90s. I was like, oh, this is a book about time travel. Or some of the other books, it was like, you know, this has to take place right before Y2K because of XYZ plot thing. So when I'm actively reading it, I'm not thinking about it as a return to or a nostalgia for those times. I'm just thinking of it as this is the correct time for this story to take place. So when I was thinking about, oh, well, what do I add to it? I actually went back to the 90s to talk about books that I thought should be in the conversation or were in the conversation that I don't think should have gotten as much recognition. So I'm going to let Jane, that was my long-winded way of saying, I'm going to let Jane start because I think you've got some modern picks.
Sure. Okay. So I'll go first. My first pick is the How to Build a Girl series by Catlin Moran. I knew you would like her, Sydney. I knew it.
Yep.
So Catlin Moran is one of my favorites. She is a British author who grew up as the oldest, I want to say, of eight children, in a very working class family. And she dropped out of high school to become a music journalist. And basically was this young girl who looked a lot older than she was, and acted a lot more sophisticated than she was, writing articles about rock and roll music and just meeting a really interesting cast of characters. It's partially autobiographical, but mostly fictional. And our lead character, Joanna, she, as you're kind of watching her go through having this adult freedom, but still the brain of a teenager, you kind of want to say, like, please, oh no, don't do that, please, oh no, don't, oh, don't do that, no. But it's just highly entertaining. And as a teenager who was like a lot more introverted and shy, reading about Joanna just kind of going for it so much really was just so fun and so great. She makes a lot of stupid choices. It's very entertaining. I think these are just a great recommendation. I think they have crossover potential for teenagers. I would also say they remind me of like the Georgia Nichols
I
series,
was just about to say
which
yes.
I also love, which starts with Angus thongs and full frontal snogging.
That's
It
so
reminds me
good.
of the Georgia Nichols, which were critical to my teenage 90s self. It reminds me of those, but with a more sexually active
Yes.
protagonist, which, what's better,
Great.
right?
Right. Oh my God, those books make me laugh out loud still. So funny. Oh, that's
As
so
I'm like
good.
scanning my YA shelf for them because they were
Oh,
crucial.
me
Yes.
too. I
Yeah.
own them all
Crucial.
too. And I don't even know that, I don't know if they're in print anymore. Like, I know that they've definitely like fallen out of pop culture, but I think they'll have a moment again because they are so funny.
They really are funny.
I think so. And that's a thing I'm glad you mentioned because I bought them obviously when I was a youth. And then they completely changed the cover design
Yes.
and did like a rebrand halfway
Yeah.
through. And so I'm looking at them. I see that they're like
Neon.
completely different halfway through. And then I have annoyingly the paperback, two hardcovers, a paperback. It's like
I'm like
all
looking at them on my
your
shelf right
beautiful
now. I'm
book
going to
set.
grab one so you can see it.
Oh, yay.
Because I have the old ones that I got at a library book sale. Yes.
Yes. See, Oh my
those
gosh,
ones,
that cover.
I have half that design and then half the new design where they obviously were trying to appeal to like a more, like, I don't know, not sophisticated
Sophisticated
teen
teen.
audience, but
Yeah,
like, yeah. But that's
Yeah,
been a
they're not
thing.
as like cartoony. They're a little more like they have like a real
It's
person's
like a
legs or whatever on the
photo.
cover.
My gosh. I'm like, that's actually been a quest of mine at library book sales in literally the last 2 to 3 years, is if I see books from my teen years and I'm like, ooh, do I have this still? And I don't, and I get it.
I've been
And
doing
so
that too, Emma.
it's
You have
like
to build
reliving
up
the,
your year.
yeah,
Yeah.
I
the
haven't
glory
reread
days.
a lot of them, but I need to.
But you sometimes it's one of those things you just have to have.
Yeah. And I like did keep a lot. But there were some gaps in the collection, and I was like, well, I need them now, obviously. And again, like, right, we have adult money. So I bought like a lot of Meg Cabot books where I was missing a
Oh, Meg
few.
Cabot.
I just wish
Yeah.
we could go buy them at Borders.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Oh,
Yep.
Borders.
Yep. I'm
I
like,
used to work
Borders.
there.
Did you?
Yeah, the
Me.
Westlake one.
My favorite store.
Oh, it's
It
so
was just
good.
so
It's
good.
so fun.
I don't know that current retailers quite hit the same, but
No, they
we always
try,
talk
but it's
about
not the
borders
same.
on the podcast.
So good.
R.I.P.
Oh, I'm gonna do a really quick pick before we hear Sydney's, if that's okay, because it's a
Please.
totally different,
Yeah.
because it's a 2020 novel set in the 90s.
Yeah.
So it is again that different approach where we're looking at the 90s from a little bit of a modern viewpoint. And but by like an OG author. And so it's The Mall by Megan McCafferty. This came out in summer of 2020 and it's set in 1991. It's a YA coming of age, New Jersey Mall. So like, hello, all of these key
Amazing. So
points,
good.
keywords. are what we want. And so we have teenager Cassie, who is fully into everything that's cool in 1991, scrunchies, mixtapes, 90210, the original. And she's spending the summer after she graduates high school working at Parkway Center Mall. And in just like a few short weeks after the summer, her and her boyfriend will be heading off to college to fulfill all of their adult plans. They're going to pursue their higher education and they're happily ever after together. But of course, like the classic, like best laid plans sort of situation. And it just follows Cassie as she works at the mall and everything sort of goes awry over the summer. The story discusses friendship, love, and helps Cassie ultimately find herself in the most unexpected of places. And Megan McCafferty is the best-selling author of the Jessica Darling series, which feels fitting to this episode. If you don't know, look it up.
Great little teen romance.
Yeah.
So also, the fact that it's like mall-centric is so perfect because where are they? Oh my God. I know. I saw that cover. It's so good. It's a neon sign cover for listeners. It's
and there's like neon, like I'm holding the print book, which is silly because you can't see on the podcast. But if you do pick this book up in a physical form, there's also like neon escalators on the back.
Oh, so
I can smell the Cinnabon.
Yeah.
I can smell it.
I wish I
saw it. And the bourbon chicken samples.
Oh my gosh. You could just get full getting samples throughout the mall.
The pizza. So good.
Sparrow.
Yeah. Yes. Sparrow. The like piped in music.
Oh my gosh.
It was so aggressive in some of the stores. Fountains that had
like kind of a weird smell.
Oh, right. It wasn't chlorinated. There was just something chemical in the fountains.
Mildewy or something.
Right. Yeah. Totally. Oh. It's like people throwing stuff in there. Oh my gosh. Such a good pick. As I said at the beginning, when I was thinking about what I wanted to bring on and thinking about like anything that I've read recently where I've been like, oh yay, 90s. Jane and I have a pick that we'll talk about together, which will be a surprise to zero people who've heard me on the podcast before. But before that, I decided to think about what books were super influential at the time and my reaction to them, and then the ones that were influential specifically to me. So I'll start there with just like talk about a classic. Like I have known since I was very young that I wanted to be a writer. Like I knew that my whole life. I haven't always been great about it. And by haven't always, I mean, I have never been particularly good at practicing. But the 90s were when I first picked up Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott, which I think is just like the most quintessential writing tome because it is gentle, it is specific, it is practical, and it's full of that adorable Anne Lamott, like preachy wisdom. And because of that book, it allowed me to love her later when she started to talk about our Lord. It's not my Lord. Because I felt like it was such a good introduction to treating the practice of writing as ritual. And ritual then of course relating to like how do you treat your day-to-day life, and like, you know, when you're in your teens and early 20s, which is where I was in the 90s, habits are forced upon you. You know, you have to go to your job and you have to, like, I don't know, if you're still living with your parents, live under your parents' rules, and you have to like pay your insurance or like whatever it is, like you're starting to come into these adult-ish or adult adjacent habits for the first time. And to so to build something that's just for you, to build something that's like specifically around your interests and passions was such a new thing as a kid. And so to have someone just be like, anyone can do this. You have to be gentle with yourself. Here's some things to build that practice. It was really influential through the rest of my life, especially as an adult and realizing, oh, hey, like I have kind of a neurospicy brain and things don't work the same way that they do for other people. And habit building for me is a chore. I mean, I'm sure it's a chore for everybody. Like nobody loves to pay their taxes. Shout out to April 15th, the day that we're recording this. US tax day for any non-American listeners. But like, I don't know. It's just one of those books. If you haven't read it, it's short story or short nonfiction pieces all about the practice of writing. And it starts with a story that the author tells about how her brother is supposed to be doing a book report about birds, and in typical like little kid fashion, leaves it till the very, very last minute and breaks down in hysterics the night before it's due. And their dad comes to him and she's like, how can I help? Whatever. And he freaks out. Oh, I've got this report due. And he's like, it's okay, buddy. Like, we'll finish it. We just need to take it bird by bird, buddy, bird by bird. And so I think of that all the time whenever I'm trying to make big changes in my life entirely. And I'm just like, okay, I don't have to do it all at once. I can just take it bird by bird.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
That's such it. Good advice, though, for so many things.
As and I'm like, if I had a quarter for every last minute diorama I had to make, I'd probably have a few bucks. So,
oh my goodness, I love that. But Jane, what else did you want? The next one, I'm cheating. I see your notes on the list. I think the next one is one that everyone here has a lot of things to say if we want to talk about that one now.
Yes. So the next one is from an in-house favorite author who has been on the podcast before, Rainbow Rowell, and it's Attachments. So this is an adult fiction book that is a very slow burn, which I love a slow burn, a very slow burn romance set in the 1990s. And I think we all have a love for this one.
I have so many feelings about this. First of all, it's her first book. It was my first Rainbow Rowell. I read it shortly after it was published, and she is forevermore my favorite author. This book, this is the book when people are like, oh, what's your favorite book? Or like, what book would you share with everyone? It is this book. It is like half epistolary and half first person POV. It's dual POV sort of. It's like best friendship in the most beautiful, approachable, hilarious way. There are lines that I completely quote from start to finish. And I remember going to one of her interviews, I think it was at CPL actually, and her being like, I don't trust people, something along the lines of, I don't trust people who don't love Lincoln. And I'm like, Lincoln O'Neill is my boyfriend.
Yeah.
Like, I love him forever.
Yeah. So let's talk about Lincoln. So Lincoln he's in the IT department and he works overnights. So his job is to go through company emails and just make sure that, you know, secrets aren't being shared and stuff like that. But he finds himself gravitating towards Beth's emails, this journalist for this little newspaper. And he starts to develop this crush on her. And so you see the world from her perspective and from his, and then also in her emails, and then in him reading her emails and developing feelings for her. It's just delightful.
All her emails, P.S., are just exchanges between her and her best friend, Jennifer, who also works at the same paper. So you never really hear her POV except in those emails to this one person. So it's like a very two-sided, because you hear Jennifer's responses too, but you get to hear about her life from her emails, and then Lincoln's reaction to those. And he, of course, has his own life, too, that you're hearing about. It's so sweet. I don't understand how anybody had the talent to talk about a slow burn romance that is essentially like a stalker story. And it's not creepy.
Yes. And I think
like, how did she pull that off?
I think that Rainbow is, she writes some of the best male love interests because I think she understands the female gaze.
Yes.
Lincoln is never dangerous.
Nope.
He's an introvert who is like having a little bit of trouble connecting to people and might be going through like a little bit of just kind of a down point in his life. He's struggling a little bit. And I think that she shows that sometimes people like that just need to find someone that brings light and brings a different perspective. And I relate to that a lot because I feel like my husband is kind of that kind of a character where he's more of like sit and listen kind of character where I'm more like, you know, writing my emails and being nutty. And I think she really gets that. I think she gets it to the perfect place where it's not, it would be creepy on paper, but it's not somehow.
Right. I also think like, and I can't remember exactly when, I guess I could look this up, when it was published, but it was definitely before or at the start maybe of that return of sort of like the cool Uber nerd. Like Lincoln plays D&D with his friends and he like is into IT culture, obviously. And it's just like, he's doing all these things where now everybody's like, oh yeah, he plays Dungeons and Dragons. Like that's cool. He's got, you know, but that wasn't cool when she was writing it, but she made it cool. I also like reacted really strongly to the fact when he, and I don't want to spoil too much, but at one point he's decorating his apartment and he buys sheets printed with violets because he likes them. And at first he like has a moment of thinking like, maybe I shouldn't get these because maybe not manly enough. And then he's basically like, screw it. I like them. I like these flowers. I'm going to buy them. And I'm just like, you are the perfect man.
Yeah. It was 2011, by the way. I just looked it up.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Like, it's such a good book. That was also my first Rainbow Rowell book as well. And it's just, which is maybe a shame because it's such a hard one to beat, even though everything else is great.
Everything else has been perfect.
It's just it's so good. And you
I was an Eleanor and Park girl, and then I went back and read Attachment. Mm-hmm. So,
have you both read, and not, I don't want to get spoilery about it, but have you both read Slow Dance yet?
I'm about to finish it. I'm like 90% through.
Is that 90s as well? I can't quite tell when that was taking place. Okay.
It goes back and forth between modern day and like high school. So there is some
90s. High school is 90s, right? Okay. Yeah.
Ooh, so bonus rec, Rainbow Rowell's new book that comes out in the summer of this year, July 2024. Oh, 23rd. That's nice. July 23rd, 2024, Slow Dance. I'm excited to check that one out as well.
Super good.
A sort of similar vibe. I'm going to shift gears to This Time Tomorrow by Emma Straub. I don't know why it's like similar, but they're just magical people. So I feel like these books go hand in hand.
Really good character work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good character development. This one came out in 2022. So again, it is looking at the 90s from sort of present day perspective. And this is the one that does also include time travel. So I'm claiming it's historical, but it does sort of have that sort of, I guess, sci-fi element. We do travel back in time, but 90s as a vibe is just going to be the common thread for all of these picks. Now, this book follows Alice, who is about to turn 40, a big monumental birthday. Her life is fine. Like everything is good. She likes her life. She likes her job. She likes her independence. Everything, again, is fine. Great. And the only thing, though, is that her father is getting older. His health is not what it used to be. And that's something that you have to deal with as your parents get older. And it just sort of feels like something's missing. And so naturally, as happens often, obviously, is that on the following morning when she wakes up on what's meant to be her 40th birthday, she is transported back to 1996. When she turned 16, And it's not just like being fully transported back to her teen body and self, seeing her high school crush and everything. It's that she sees her dad, who is healthy and vibrant and 40. And she sort of has her 40-year-old perspective in her 16-year-old body. And it sort of asks the question of like, what would you change if you could? And would you? And it's such a great story. I don't know if I even said what it was. If I did, good on me. If I didn't, that's how good my brain is. It's This Time Tomorrow by Emma Straub.
Wouldn't it be amazing to go back and like meet your parents at the age that you are now and just kind of see what they were like?
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's really weird to think about as well. And like, yeah, I sometimes say you couldn't pay me to go back to teen years, but maybe if
yeah,
it was like
but what
for
if you had
brief...
this perspective? Yeah,
with this knowledge,
and I think,
yeah,
right. And do I remember correctly, Emma? It's been I think a year or more since I read it that it's almost Groundhog Day-y, right? Where
so.
She kind of goes back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, like, and if you're going back, like, maybe with some specific parameters, then maybe it would be okay. If you're not just like, oh, I woke up, I'm 16, and now I have to go through everything again. No,
right.
No.
Well, like, and a time period, like, and an expiration, like I'm temporarily here, but I'm going back to my life after we're done. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Because I am who I am, both of the covers of this, the paperback, the hardcover, the digital cover, it's just lovely and
it is beautiful.
Beautiful to look at. So
I read that very soon before or after I read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. And the like rainbowy vibes on both just made me so have like rainbow and text. It's beautiful.
Yeah, this cover does look really reminiscent of the Tomorrow, Tomorrow and Tomorrow cover.
And this is
a
weird
trend.
Thing, but I went and saw a band that I love, the Magnetic Fields, and Emma Straub came out and played with them.
What?
She's a musician as well, and I'm like blanking on what she played.
Okay, so she writes amazing books. She owns one of my favorite bookstores in the world, and she's a musician. Rude.
Yes, and I'm like trying to.
What
look
am I
back.
Doing
like,
with my life?
I know she's cool. She's so cool.
Oh my gosh. And
thank God I have two of you two.
I mean, and I'm learning this for the first time because it's on overdrive.com. She was also on the Professional Book Nerds podcast in 2017. So if you want a throwback conversation,
I wonder when her next book is coming out because she should come back.
We'll link it.
That'd be so
but yes,
fun.
She might be due for a return and an updated visit.
That'd be amazing.
I'm writing a note.
Can I be weird and talk about something adjacent, which is some of the things that I was thinking about when we were bringing up this topic and when I first thought about this as historical fiction? I started thinking about like, well, what books were popular at the time? And like, what did that say about us as readers, as countrymen, all that kind of stuff. And I was kind of to go through and I was like, okay, well, what were some of the books that like I absolutely loved? And what were some of the books that like, oh yeah, this is what people were reading. She's Come Undone was a huge one. And I think that was also like Memoirs of a Geisha time. That's when I learned not to trust men who write as women. And that just kind of led into like, I will only read certain male authors now because I don't think you're trustworthy. I don't think you understand women and you scare me. There was a lot of like Nicholas Sparks that came out, which was never my thing, but like I knew that that was like what everyone was reading. I want to say Stephen King wrote 8 or 9 books in the 90s. Maybe it was 8 books.
Wow.
But I'm just like, I mean, that was like, what a chunk of time. And I've like loved Stephen King my whole life. So good, bad, ugly, you know, we have our own issues with him. But like, that's prolific. American Psycho came out. Angela's Ashes came out. Like, these are books that like, now that I'm thinking about them, I'm like, how many of these are like in high school literature classes and are required reads for these classes. And I was like, is that what makes something historical fiction? Is that now it becomes part of like the curriculum? I don't know. That just kind of, it gave me pause as I was looking through all of these, all of the lists that I brought up.
Are there any... a lot of like big issue books too.
Yes.
Like, and they lend themselves.
Girl Interrupted. To... Like,
yeah. What was that? White Oleander. Oh, yeah. And what was the one? I read The Horse Whisperer. And oh, like, it was an adult romance, but
yeah.
You know, I thought, oh, Horse Whisperer.
The Bridges of Madison County. Like, there's just, there, yeah, you're, I think you totally hit the nail on the head. It was like all issue books where it was like, we're going to tackle a problem of our times, or like even our romances, if they're not like the sweet and sappy ones that you were talking about before, like, then they were like, we're going to deal with Alzheimer's. we're gonna make everybody cry at the end, or like there was a lot of horror, a lot of suspense, a lot of psychological dramas big that feelings. I feel like were really big. Yeah. And then even as you like, you had to dig for it, but even as you got into like some of our more diverse authors, like that's when Parable of the Sower was written, that's right. When like Jazz was written, like big stuff happening, right. I'm trying to think of like, now I go into a bookstore and I'm like, and I am not saying that these are not, that she does not cover important issues, but like I can go into a bookstore now and pick up Beach Read by Emily Henry and I'm delighted and transported and I'm entertained and I am fulfilled. But I don't have to go in and be like, am I going to choose between like a psychological drama about marriage or a horror book about small towns or somebody, a man who thinks he knows how to represent the fat woman's experience.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think what else was wild about the 90s that we've sort of touched on is that a lot of books were published for children, but are actually what we would now call YA. And that mm-hmm. like really wasn't a thing until kind of the late 90s and into the 2000s that they really started shifting books for that young adult category as well.
Yeah. I have a pick for that I was like, I think this is technically adult, but when you think of who it's for, you're like, wait. Mm-hmm. And that was the other pick I had, was The Virgin Suicides.
Yes.
When I'm like, yeah, who was that? I feel like that's for adults, but every teen and early 20s person I knew read it.
I certainly did.
And that's like,
I still love the movie.
I know, it's in my so rotation. Good. It's so, so good.
Yeah, I feel like there was a lot. I feel like they didn't understand teens as well as we do now, but the groundwork was being laid for so much good fiction that was to come.
Yeah.
Totally. Absolutely. I'm cheating because I actually have some of our show notes in front of us and my TBR is growing by the second. I'm wondering if you all have some more modern picks to add to my list, because I can talk about 90s books forever, but I have some thoughts and feelings about some of your current picks.
Yeah,
do you want me to go next?
Yeah, give us another pick and then I'll do one and then we'll see where we're at, because we can drone on forever and
talk
about this topic.
For sure. So my next pick is I Have Some Questions For You by Rebecca Mackay. She is one of my all-time favorite authors. And the weird thing is I saw her literally last week at Cuyahoga County Public Library and was just blown away by her. She was just incredible. But this book is on like the most basic level, it's a little bit of a murder mystery. It's literary fiction. it's a book about, if you had to dilute it down to one thing, you could say it's a book about a murder that happened at a boarding school to our main character, Bodhi's roommate. But it's so much more than that. It's told through the lens of Bodhi now as a middle-aged woman who has returned to the boarding school to teach a class about podcasting to Gen Z students in, I believe it starts in 2018. And so all of the scenes from the 90s are told from her memories in 2018, looking back on the 1990s. And the reason this all comes up is because her students decide that they want to make a podcast about this young woman who was murdered at the boarding school. So our narrator is kind of reliving her days at the school. And it's about memory. It's about, you know, how the treatment of women has changed so much over the last 30 years that it's really interesting to see her Gen Z students looking at just the facts of the case and seeing problems that Bodhi herself didn't see when it was happening, you know, about how the men around this murdered student kind of acted inappropriately towards her and how everybody was a suspect. So it's really good. And it allows readers to really reflect on the times and what has changed and how looking back is interesting and different, but still some things never really do change. So highly recommend, absolutely loved it. And her writing is just beautiful.
Was there anything about, I'm just interested, I mean, I'll be able to find out because I'm going to read this for sure. Was there anything about like the technology or lack thereof that you think, oh, it had to take place?
Yes.
That piece
totally.
Of it as well?
And I think that is absolutely, I think, a reason. I think writers are, I think the 90s is really, writing about the 90s is really appealing because you don't have instant access yep. to information like you do now. In the 90s, when her roommate was murdered, you know, our character only could know what was available to her, which was not a lot. And then the students in 2018, looking back, they of course have.
Sure.
Episodes of TV archives, right. They have newspapers, they have all these different resources. And I do think that that makes a really, I think it makes a convenient, it's convenient to leave out modern technology because it allows, I guess it allows characters to not know things that they would know now. And I feel like sometimes people learning things slowly is the most interesting part of a story.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, now it's like, oh, we would have just Googled that. Right. I'm currently reading A Secret History by Donna Tartt, which is also in the 90s, but mm-hmm. I haven't finished it yet. So, yeah. And there's a part where one of the characters asks the definitions of a term. And the other character says, I don't know because I don't know how to spell it. So I can't look it up in the dictionary. And I was like, oh, my God.
Right. Right?
You know,
getting so, places without GPS.
Yes.
You know, all of the things that I think about that constantly, which is why I wonder if that's why I'm so obsessed with the idea of 90s as historical fiction versus like a slice in time. And as a writer, it's such a problem solver.
Yes.
But it brings up all kinds of other things that it's, I don't know. So I read somewhere that like if a problem can be solved with communication, particularly in romance novels. So it's like, if there's just a big misunderstanding and this could have been very easily cleared up with a conversation, that drives a lot of people crazy. It has to be really, really well done if it truly is like an issue with communication. But like multiply that by 1,000 when you're like, all you had to do is pick up your cell phone, not the landline, but like pick up the cell phone and send a text. I was here. Oh, I must have missed you. I remember when I was, I had like the moment of realizing that my husband was who I was going to spend the rest of my life with. It was all based on a series of trying to meet up on a day when I was in his city. And we just kept missing each other because I would call and leave a voicemail on his answering machine to be like, we're going here next. We'll be there until such and such a time. And if the timing was off, he would call in to get his messages and try and meet us there. And it took 2 hours or more for us. I was finally like, I'm going to be standing outside the Lush Cosmetics on Queen Street until you show up, because we had just played so much tag. But like, obviously that doesn't happen anymore. Yeah, everyone is available at your fingertips every second of the day. And that onslaught of information, that onslaught of contact, that onslaught of like information overload is constant. And like, it's just that it feels quieter, and that doesn't necessarily mean better. It could mean even more sinister in some ways, but it's just like all of that noise quiets down. And that's such an interesting space to be reading and writing in.
Right. Your characters have a lot more freedom.
Yeah.
You can do a lot more with them. You can get away with drawing things out a little bit more. Whereas you're right. Nowadays, it's like, if someone doesn't show up to lunch, you know right away why. Or, you know, right. You know right away to be worried.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Whew. Well, that's really cool. That's immediately going on the list.
It's great.
Oh, it sounds so good. I've got one more modern pick for us that I have spoken about on the podcast before, but it's been a while. And that is Carrie Soto Is Back by Taylor Jenkins Reid. This came out in 2022 and follows Carrie Soto, who we met originally, I think, in Malibu Rising. So she's a tennis superstar. She's won 20 Grand Slam titles and holds like the highest record for everything in professional tennis. And after she's retired, because you retire young in professional sports, she finds that she's watching the 1994 US Open and her record is like obliterated by an up and coming British player named Nicky Chan. And so at 37 years old, Carrie decides that she's going to go out of retirement, go back into training and have one final year to put her like record breaking streak back into place and like be the best that she can be. And she's not the most likable in the industry. She's got quite a reputation and she's coached by both her father, Javier, and a former paramour named Beau. This was not a story I was immediately like, ooh, sports. But when I tell you that, it really enhances the story because you get into the mindset of why she's so driven, what motivates her. And then there is a really interesting dynamic, obviously, between her and her father, because he's both her parent and her coach. It was such an emotional story that it just sort of made me want to learn more about tennis, but then also just made me cry. I like won't spoil it, but if you've read this, you know which parts of it made just no, I couldn't cope.
I was reading it on an airplane and I was struggling hard to not just openly cry.
I've never read it, so I'm excited. Oh yeah, it's on my list.
I'm like, yeah, so the right. What I loved about this was the relationships as well and the character building. Obviously, Carrie goes through a lot in this sort of final year that she's looking to reclaim her title, this final season. And all the ups and downs of that are fascinating as you're just even from the logistics, like of trying to make yourself a professional athlete again, like you can be, she's in great shape, but like to get back to like championship level is really interesting as well. I obviously would not have thought about all of the things that goes into it, but these people are incredible. Anyways,
that's awesome.
Like Carrie Soto Is Back by Taylor Jenkins Reid.
I have one more, if that's okay. So, I was trying to think as I was going through all of this, because I knew that we would be talking about like influential books or what got written, and like here are a couple. But like, if I had to pick one book from the 90s that I would recommend everyone read, I thought I would go there, which is a really bold statement because there's a lot of good stuff. That was when Philip Pullman was writing The Golden Compass. So like, you know that for me to pick like a quintessential 90s book, and it is The Crow Road by Ian Banks, which if you haven't read it, it is, first of all, it has bold statement again, but the best opening line of a book I have ever read in my entire life. It's a fiction, but it's a bit of a mystery as well. And so it's like a coming of age story. It's a mystery. It's got like a little bit of romance. So the main character's name is Prentice. His uncle Rory disappeared while writing a book called The Crow Road. And so he's becomes sort of obsessed with all of the papers that his uncle left behind, and he's trying to solve the mystery along the way. And he, like, you know, he basically like graduates from sort of a juvenile romance into an adult romance. There's stuff in there about failure and estrangement and sibling rivalry, and it's all against the backdrop of Glasgow. And if you've ever read, so Ian Banks does fiction and he does sci-fi, and he adds his initial in whenever he has sci-fi, which is really cool. But he is just one of the most compelling writers I have ever written. And I only read this book once. I read it in like 1997 or 8, and it has stuck with me ever since. I have not had to read it again for it to stick with me this whole time. So it is so good. I think in the show notes, the title that we'll be linking to is a more modern edition of it. But the original cover is absolutely gorgeous too. It's like this black and white block print that's super beautiful. But yeah, I don't want to spoil too much, but even if you only open the book to read the first line, you'll be hooked.
Which is what I literally did just now.
I'm
And
sure.
I'm
Is it
like, okay,
great?
wait, I need to work this in somehow to the
I
books I'm
know.
reading right
So good.
now. That's incredible.
Yay.
Thank you both for a wild discussion about the 90s and all things 90s related. We have books set in the 90s, we have books from the 90s, we have modern tales that talk about the 90s. We talked about books we read in the 90s. I feel like everything you could possibly want for that 90s nostalgia is hopefully contained in this episode. Thank you both.
90s forever.
Thank
Yay.
you.
Thank you. This was so fun. It was so good to see you both.
It was so fun to discuss. If you were around in the 90s, we'd love to hear what your favorite books are from that time period, or if you've read any modern ones that go back to that 1990s time period. And happy reading.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode on Overdrive.com or in Libby. Our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Emma Dwyer and Joe Skelly and presented by Overdrive. To learn more, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Neglia, and I am the host of the Next Best Picture podcast, part of the Film Entertainment Awards website, nextbestpicture.com. On our show, we explore all year long what is possibly going to win Best Picture at the Oscars. We do this by conducting interviews with people within the film industry, holding weekly reviews of the latest theatrical releases, and on our main show, where we dive into various different topics, answer your fan questions, and also do our best to explore Oscar history's past in hopes that it will tell us something new for this upcoming award season race. We hope that you will join us on all of the various podcasting networks. We look forward to seeing you over at nextbestpicture.com.